If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM, let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Shireen.
Wow, what an episode today. We're joined by my very good friend, Jibril Younes. Why do we have the same last name? Listen to find out. I'm not going to tell you. He's a filmmaker. He's a podcaster. We talk about his life growing up in Nebraska, what it's like to be Palestinian American now. We talk about memes, talk about food. It's a great time.
Yep. So stay tuned.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Shireen.
Wow.
There's something in my eyes. So sorry.
I mean, no one knows that until you said it, you know, like it's a podcast.
All right. I think I'm good.
Are your allergies really shitty? My allergies are the worst right now.
I have a sore throat. I have runny nose.
I mean, we both know you and I, you're the only person in the world that understands why I have a tissue on me at all times, you know?
Yeah.
Post the nasal drip. It's not cute, but it's real.
These sinuses have been nonstop since year 1990.
Yep. Yeah, big thing.
Can't stop, won't stop, dripping from my nose.
Yeah. Genuinely, you might be the only person that understands me. Like, not my sisters, not my, like, my, when I go home to my parents' house, there are tissues everywhere. Uh-huh. It's always me. Like, but you're the only one that gets it. And that's why we're friends.
I spend, let's say, like, $15,000. A year on tissues.
On tissues.
I should be able to write it off in taxes. Just like, you don't understand, man.
Like, if I leave the house without a tissue on me or a packet of tissues on me, I'm fucked. I'm screwed. You know, like I
don't even know what you're talking about. Like, why would
it's
you do that?
It's like chapstick, phone, tissue essentials.
Yeah. Look at that. Like, I literally have, I got two boxes right here on the desk.
Same here.
Two, baby. You never know. You never know. So these ones are a little smaller. They're for less.
No one can see them.
You're right, you're right. So basically, I have a tissue pack that's, right now my eyes are watering, so I'm going to use that for that.
Yeah.
But I use these smaller tissues for less load. And then I got the bigger tissues for the real shebang. That's
yeah,
when I'm just sitting here.
I need to get smallers.
When I sit and I don't wipe it forever because I'm just hoping it just, I don't know what I think I'm hoping. I'm just like, maybe it'll just go away.
The other day on a call, on a Zoom call, my eyes were watering so much. I kept dabbing. I was just basically crying. And I was like, I'm so sorry. It's not you. I'm not sad.
It's not you. It's me. Yeah. That's me right now. My eyes are all watery.
Yeah. Well, It might be because of this guest. You might be so overcome with emotion. I'm kidding. But you might have heard his laughter in the background just now. We made him laugh. We're already working hard.
Very good start.
But me and this guest have been friends for a while. He actually, I feel like the origin story of our friendship is pretty funny. And I'd like to talk about it when I introduce him. But he introduced me to a previous guest of the show, Dalene Saw, who is incredible. I'm wearing her shirt right now. I know you can't see it, but she made the shirt for the Gaza 5K. So I'm wearing it in her honor today. He introduced me to her, and we became friends because of a connection that I want to talk about. Before I get too into it, let's just bring him in. It's Jibril Yunus.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a long time coming. We've been friends for too long. And
yeah, I'm so excited to be here. I'm such a fan of tissue banter. all Kleenex related activities.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
I feel like it's only fair to start with a name discussion, but the last name first, because people probably notice that you have my same last name.
Or yeah, we people have will figure it out, I think.
So
that you guys are twins. Just joking.
Surprise. I mean,
we have like a weird amount of things in common beyond that, because we're also both Aries.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And
we're both Aries.
Yeah. I guess we're both Arab, which is obvious at this point. But to me, that's like a lot with compared to most people.
I mean, honestly, when I met you and realized you were a Christian Arab, I was surprised because I assumed my last name was Muslim for some reason. I just assumed it was like a thing. I don't know. But I've learned a lot with our friendship.
I was also surprised for the same reason.
Right.
Also, I just want to go on record like, I'm not religious.
I mean, yeah, me either.
No, that was my, sorry.
Just need to do that for the people that don't know me.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, this is a religious podcast.
Dude, I fucking knew you've been trapping me for so long.
Look, I'm just going to pray for your soul, okay? Because God is always watching.
The buildup was to bring you on, convert you to the real book, you know?
But the real problem comes at the end, which is, do you choose Sunni or Shia?
Yeah.
And you know what? We can't make that choice for you.
Yeah,
that comes down to what you want. Whose side are you on?
Somebody's going to have to do some hard sells. Yeah.
Just joking. I honestly, doesn't matter. That's my take on the Sunni v. Shia debate.
Shrug.
Doesn't matter.
Well, whatever.
They've just only been going after each other for millennia for no reason other than just like what one
semantics.
Dude. Yeah, literally.
I love
what,
like conflicts in the Arab and like Middle Eastern, North African world. There's like a rushing nesting doll of specificity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like one, you know, like there's like Arabs and Jews, and then there's Arabs and Arabs, and then there's like Arabs and Christians, and then there's Muslim or like, you know, Muslims and Christians.
Inter-Muslim
stuff. And it's just like, where does it end?
It never does.
No, it doesn't. It goes down to an individual level where people are really having like conflicts of the soul.
I mean, the whole
fight.
The Sunni versus Shia is like, well, who should succeed Prophet Muhammad? And one guy's like,
it's the nephew. Well, yeah. I think it's not. And that's then they're the whole fight.
That's it, bitch. For the next 5 billion years, we will not fuck with each other.
Yeah.
And it's like,
truly,
dude,
the pettiest shit. Like, religion is the pettiest,
pettiest
thing I've ever heard of. Like,
I know.
Every single one, the origin is a level of petty. Like,
but it transcends beyond, like, there's like, that's like the base, right? You're like Sunni Vishya, whatever. But then that level of petty transcends to almost every aspect of like Middle Eastern culture. It's like, well, your uncle's not coming over today. Why? Because he said that his sister looked like this cousin and you know that sister and cousin don't like each other. Why would he say that? And you're like, what? What do you mean? So is that coming to my birthday?
There are so many family feuds in my family, genuinely right now, and also like my whole life that have happened because of truly the pettiest shit. Like, my mom didn't say hello to my uncle's wife one time. Mm-hmm. And for years, they hated us. Like, we weren't allowed to go to their house. Every time we went to Syria, we would avoid them because one time, they were convinced my mom snubbed her. Like, look, what? Come on.
I'm going to catch heat for saying this, but a lot of my family feuds are nonsense.
Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah, my Iranian family will show up in my DMs over that comment. but it's true. Yeah.
That's true.
I was in the car with my mom for the first time, and I spent time with my mom for the first time in like a year yesterday, and an hour of the first 2 hours were giving me a play-by-play rundown of a current family feud that's happening.
Of course.
And it was so petty.
Yeah,
it always is.
Right now, there's a family feud going on in my family. I mean, there's always several.
Sorry, I'm doing the family. That's the Iranian family feud theme now. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, honestly, okay.
There's like an Arab SNL sketch within family feuds.
Yes, truly.
Should we all just start giving our family feuds away? I have one. So,
are you debating whether you should do this?
Yeah, actually, my dad is probably going to be like, what the fuck? But there's one where two sisters don't like each other because one has more money than the other.
That pans out.
And I don't know about you, but like, I don't really, that's just is what it is.
Yeah. Well, for a long time,
I don't know what to say about that.
There's one origin of a family feud for me that kind of relates to my dad marrying my mom, but my dad didn't like his cousin enough to marry her and marry my mom instead. So that family, his cousin's family, kind of had a grudge against him and my mom for a very long time. Oof. Like well after they were married. That's a family. I mean, there are 50 that I can even just think of right now. The current one that's really eating me up is, I'm not going to get into details, but it involves my uncle.
Name names.
Who I've known my whole life and literally lives like 30 minutes away from my parents, but we haven't talked to him in years because my mom is the only sibling he doesn't talk to because of the pettiest shit that he thinks he has the right to be mad about concerning my dad, and he just thinks that means he won't see his nieces again. I can't see my cousins that are his daughters that are really small and cute, but
there's something bred into all of us that's like, over small shit or big shit, like it does not matter how big the drama is. Mm-hmm. Like they're willing to just end relationships mm-hmm. forever.
Yeah. It's absurd. It's truly absurd.
And you know, look, I'm not going to deny that some of that didn't trickle down into my ass. Okay.
I mean, I'm petty. Petty as fuck, I'm very petty.
You do like I recently. I'm not going to name names because it was kind of out there for a hot minute. A certain person was tweeting about a show that I produce. Just being very out there with our business, which didn't need to be. They could have easily spoken to us. Not a big deal. But when I saw that shit, I was like, so you're just going to put our business out there, huh? Okay. Lose my number. I mean, literally. And I'm not going to lie. I still feel that way. Lose my number.
Fair.
You want to bring, I'm from a Middle Eastern family. You going to bring my business and put it on the street? Well, honey, you should listen to this podcast and understand how I work because that's not right.
I don't think he probably thought of it as...
No, I because think... they're white. So they didn't think. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Okay, that's where the petty is born, baby. It's that easy. It's like
I love it.
That much.
Let's pivot a little bit. So, okay, the whole reason you and I even met is because of our last name, because genuinely we had a mutual friend, Elise, who helped us produce our YouTube series back in the day and introduced us to our first network also back in the day. But
Holowicki. Holowicki.
Yes. Elise Holowicki, the cutest last name. But she was like, hey, my friend Gabe is also an Arab filmmaker. And surprise, you guys have the same last name. You should meet. And I was like, okay.
That's how I was. Yeah, that's how she rolled it out to me, too.
It's just like a weird way to be. I mean, like, I was trying to think about it, and I love her. She's a great friend. I mean, we're acquaintances at this point, but I appreciate her a lot. But I was thinking, and I was like, I wouldn't ever be like, oh, you have the last name Lopez. She has the last name Lopez. Yeah. You guys should meet. Like, I don't know.
I mean, I think there's like so few of us out there, possibly, that it is noteworthy.
Yeah.
And more than that, I think that like, at least for me, I mean, white people love letting you know that you can be comfortable around them. That's not true. A drag on Elise. It's a little bit of a drag on Elise. I'm sorry if you listen to this, Elise. But no, like, that's just a thing, you know? And also, I think for me, because people say that shit all the time, but for me, when I was like, okay, I'll look you up. I was like, oh, this person's cool. Mm-hmm. And we do have the same. And then my brain was like, oh, we do have the same last name. That's special. I think that's where it began.
I think if I had looked you up and didn't like your work or something, I would never have like cared. But because I looked you up, and I was like, okay, respect. Like this is intriguing to me. Let's meet, or like let's become friends. So yeah, I do. I'm grateful for that connection, because also when you're an adult, you don't know when you're gonna make friends. You know what I mean? Like I feel like it is what it is. And look what happened now. We're good friends.
Yeah, I feel good about that. And I think that also. Having like Arabs around you in LA is a rare thing, at least for me. So yeah. I appreciated it at the end of the day.
Yeah, me too.
And the less time I can spend around white people, the better.
Big same.
That's the motto of this podcast. The less time we can spend around white people, the better.
Yeah. I will say, we and you have talked about...
Sorry. My boyfriend from the other room who is a white guy just said, what? I'm sorry, Zach.
Really I love funny. It.
Oh, Zach, we love you, Zach.
What?
But I will say, me and you have talked about this a lot in our friendship. But like, I don't have a lot of close Arab friends, especially like growing up. It was my sisters, then like some family friends. But I wouldn't say I have like a close group of Arabs to go to like reminisce about the homeland or cooking or something. And so. Yeah, I think I really welcome the friendship too for that reason, because like talk to you about like, I don't know, I can say things in an Arab accent or talk about things that only Arabs would know or something. And so it was really refreshing. Just, and so I appreciate
at a base level,
that.
Like having somebody to send like memes to.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's solid. How I feel about like certain Persians I've met like on the internet, like Twitter friends, where I'm like, that's my good friend.
Right.
It's like, we've met a few times in person, but like we don't know each other. But I'm like, no, we're good friends.
There's a connection.
But it's because we're Persian, and I'm like, I love you. Mm-hmm. it's that simple.
I feel that way with like all Palestinian meme people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shireen was talking about the last time we saw each other. You were talking about Subi.
I love him. Oh my god,
he's amazing!
I love him. He's this,
I do
like,
not know his handle. I would plug him, but he's great.
Subhi Taha. Subhi. I think it's Supi period Taha. He's an amazing, like, I don't know, just internet person. And he's Palestinian and Filipino. And he is just so funny. Literally, my sisters and my mom, we all send his memes to each other. She cracks up every time she watches one of his videos. And it makes me so happy that there's, like, he's intergenerational. She's my mom. And she loves him just as much as I do. He's so funny. But, there's, like, a certain humor that, like, I couldn't send that to my white friend or any kind of other friend. It has to be a Middle Easterner.
That's how I feel about Peabody. Peabody on Instagram is truly like unbelievable how he can mimic a Persian dad, like unlike anything I've ever seen. Dude, it's amazing.
When I can't do that, I can't do Arab or like, Middle Eastern dad accent at all. Mm-hmm. And when I hear somebody else do it well, it fucks me up. I'm so surprised.
There was a really,
but I feel so protective over like all of those influencers that I do not know in person, where I'm just like, I am friends with them.
I will back them up until I die.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's one recent one that my mom, we all loved so much. He was imitating the way Middle Eastern dads will like try to translate a proverb into English, being like, when the acorn falls from the tree.
Yeah.
And it's all like, it's like this like convoluted stuff about like, that's why you have to make mistakes. It's like the end result is like actually pretty endearing and like enlightening, but it's just so funny. I would love to have him on the show. He's so good.
That is a literally Peabody will be like, the dad, Persian dad's talking, and he's like, one time a raccoon stole all my socks. And you're like, that's such a weird Persian dad story that you would hear. Like, what? And then he doesn't, no context.
Yeah.
Nothing. You're like, at my youth, the raccoons were always stealing my things. And you're like, what are you talking about? But like, no context whatsoever. And it's like the most Persian dad thing I've ever heard. It's just the nuance is there that you're like, you nailed it.
I didn't realize how important this kind of community was until like honestly a little bit later, because during this past year, you and I, we went to Little Arabia in Anaheim, and we got like Mena'ish last year, like the one time one of two times we hung out and saw each other last year, I think, maybe one of three. Just interacting with the owner in Arabic, or like, just, I don't know, there was something so... Especially because we both weren't able to see our parents for so long. There was just something like it filled a void that I really needed. And even before 2020, like realizing that that community is important, and to, for me, feeling Syrian enough to write about Syria or to talk about Syria, or even Muslim enough or Arab enough to even address these things because I'm American too. I don't know. It's important to like to feel strong in your roots that way. Like the same way Subhi is. Like Subhi's half Palestinian, grew up mostly in the States, but he's so proud of being Palestinian. Yeah. And I really am inspired by that, honestly.
I mean, I think that like very much comes from something I'm like just straight up jealous of, which is like this constant probably validation from the people around him. Like I wonder what his community was like growing up.
Yeah.
But I think for me, and the reason that I have to like seek that shit out so much, I don't know if I don't want to speak for anybody else. But like I grew up in, my parents immigrated to Nebraska. Like that's where I am right now, just visiting them. They're still here. I just grew up around white people only, like only whites all the time. And so like, especially after, you know, most of my culture was served to me by my family. And like, especially after I left, you know, I lived in like Chicago and then LA, it you know, it's up to me to like seek that shit out, which is why I think I have like, in LA specifically, like I feel a lot of camaraderie with just like even Persian people or, you know, people who have like similar experiences, but aren't the same necessarily.
Yeah.
And I was talking to my mom about that. And she was like, yeah, my friend Ghazal, who you know, she's Persian, and her and I are like, she's like my big sister. And I adore her. She's amazing. She also just wrote, I've been working at Headspace. She just wrote a sleepcast for us called Blue Hammam about a Persian bathhouse, which is real tight.
Oh,
I'm going to plug that right now. Yeah. She's so talented and great.
That's really cool.
But like, she's like my big sister. And I remember telling my mom about that. And she was like, why? You're not even like, you're not the same. Like, we're not the same. And I was like, yeah. But you don't like, that's like that's close enough for me. So yeah. I think that like when Elise, to circle all the way back, when Elise and was like, you should meet this person. I was like, okay, cool. Yeah. But I also, there's like a lot of nerves that comes with that. Cause it's, you know, not often super easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do want to ask you about, I mean, so many things, but you mentioned Nebraska and stuff and your parents immigrating there, and I want to talk all about it. But first, let's take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM, let's create.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
And we're back with Jabril. I did say I want to talk about Nebraska, but now that I said your name out loud, I do want to talk about, you started wanting to go by Jabril, which is like the Arabic way of saying Gabriel. I love the name Jabril. I remember when we were learning about the Quran, like in Saturday school growing up, Jibril is one of the most important angels in the Quran. And I always, that name was always so strong sounding to me and so unique. I honestly I think it's so beautiful that you're reclaiming that kind, that version of your name. So yeah, talk about that a little bit.
Well, I think that like that, it, you know, my Cito named me and that's what he named me. And then my parents, Anglo side. All right, y'all, let's just bring it back to some petty family shit real quick. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like real normal. I think it might be this way for Muslim people, but like if I had a kid, that kid's name, or like if my kid had a kid, they would name, like the firstborn is named after like the grandfather. Like that's just the vibe. That's the thing you do. So like my brothers, my nephew is named Elias, and so is my dad. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which is like Elias here.
Yeah.
So my cousin, Jay Paul, Jabber Paul, was named after my Cito Jabber, which is Jabriel. And so when my parents were trying to think of names for me when I was born, they like, you know, I narrowly dodged like all the Ninja Turtles. I don't know why they were like stuck on Italian Renaissance. One thing about Christian Arabs is they'll name their children like crazy shit. Mm-hmm. Like super white stuff, like Donatello or whatever. Giovanni. I have a cousin whose kid is named Giovanni. And it's like, all right, let's do it. But anyway, so my grandpa like settled it by saying name him Jabril. And they felt like because I had a cousin named Jabber already, they couldn't do that. So they anglicized it. And then more than that, you know, like I grew up with like not a real attachment to any part of, I grew up as Gabby for like 18 years.
Really? I didn't know that.
Which is also what they would call that, like, you know, even when I went back to Palestine, that's what they called me, which I think is just what they call small kids or like, you know, whatever. And then like some people will call me Gabriel and some people will call me Gabe. And then I moved so many times that like what people called me stopped. Like I don't feel connected to any. This happens at work. It happens a lot because people ask me what I prefer. And I don't really feel connected to like any of my first names because it's just been switched a lot. So I think the one I feel connected to and also I think like the poison of like white assimilation that happens to all of us, like so much of my work in the past 5 years has just been like focused on like sorting my own shit out in regards to like how growing up in the American Midwest, like, you know, fucked me up. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, going to Jabril, one, it's like a real dope name. And two, I think that it's just a part of that and a part of like feeling closer to who I am. And I think maybe like 5 or 6 years ago, like I think I realized the way I thought of myself internally, you know, like Arab or like Arab man, you know, the like Arab was like the first thing I would think, but externally, like I didn't really, it didn't match, and that felt real like gross and terrible to me internally. And so I think it's just like an effort to continue moving to a place that I feel more connected and seen by or at.
I relate a lot to that because I don't even remotely feel connected to my name. Like I've been Anna and Anna my whole life. And when someone's like, what do you prefer? I'm like, I honestly could care less because I'm technically Anna, but my whole life I've just been called Anna anyway. So like, I really could care less what you call me. It's like Anna or Anna. I don't care. You can call me both if you want. You can call me Anna Anna if you want. I really don't care.
I wonder what that is because I also don't feel connected to my name either. Because so many people just say it, like, I mean, everyone Americanizes all of our names, right? Like, and so I think maybe that makes us feel disconnected from it in a way. Because, like, I honestly, the names I feel most connected to are the nicknames my mom and dad call me, or my cousins call me. And those aren't that's not Shireen. It's even the way I say my name right now, it's Shireen. Like, no, it's Shireen. Like, it's supposed to be this, like, sing-songy, like, really thing. And I just don't relate to it. I feel like there's a connection there with the way our names are bastardized and us just like kind of accepting, like, just call me anything. It's just, it's whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's so weird because like I grew up calling, you know, my mom's name is Meha and she goes by every day. She did it today out everywhere. Maha. Mm-hmm. And she says Maha like Omaha. So people get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or, you know, all of my uncles or my dad, whoever, like my dad's name is Elias. He goes by Elias, like, Amabulas, Uncle Paul, like Amabutras, Uncle Peter. Like they all did it. And I think what that showed me, because the way I know them intimately, like, you know, in our personal relationships is Amabulas, whatever. Mm-hmm. but the way that like the word you have to, it's almost like code switching. Like you have to, when you interact with other people, you have to like, they're like, oh, you're Uncle Paul. And you're like, yes. So, you know, like, you know, and present like two versions of how you know these people. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I mean,
and so I think names just stop meaning shit.
I feel like a lot of Middle Eastern people Americanize their name just to like fit, like just to make it easier. Like we go out of our way to make it easier for everyone else so they don't like other us any more than they already have. Like my mom's name is Sharbanu, but goes by Bobby. Like my dad's Saifullah, but he goes by Say. Like it's just, we get it. You can't handle the names, okay?
That's why my parents gave us
the easiest names they possibly could. Like my parents were like not trying to give us hard names like they grew up with.
My parents tried to give us interesting names for me, but like, yeah, they've also Americanized their names. My dad's name is Salim, which is a beautiful name, but he goes by Sam. There are most Arab men that have the first name with an S go by Sam. And my mom, her name is, I don't know anyone else called Ruhif. It's a very old Arabic name. I think it might be like Turkish or something. I could be wrong. But I remember so distinctly growing up, I must have been 7. Power Rangers was huge back then. And she was deciding on a white name, on an American name. And she was between Rita and Rory. And back then, Power Rangers was huge. And the main villain is named Rita. And we like were like, no, mama, you can't be Rita. No, no, no. And she went, so she went with Rory. And that now she's Rory on all her paperwork and everything. Like, not like her, Rahaf is her name. But as far as Americans are concerned, she's Rory. And I guess I do want to ask them, I should sit down and talk to them on the phone or something, just like if they feel connection to their name at all at this point, like it's, or how much of it is just like allowances or things to make it easier for others, which is so annoying as an immigrant that you even have to think about, but I guess it's just reality.
Yeah, I think it, I mean, I think it's just bullshit. It's an experience we all have, but like, I think, at the end of the day, like, you know, going by Jibril is just me, like, kind of just choosing the one thing that I feel any sort of, you know, it's like reverse Marie Kondo. Like, I just got rid of all the names that don't spark joy. And professionally, like, you know, what people know me as. And also, my friend Xavier, like, he really inspired me to sort of, he's, like, been a really large presence in, you know, my... I guess like my experience in the past 5 years, like sort of, you know, coming to terms with my own identity. He's a really wonderful filmmaker, but his first name is Vernon, and that's how a lot of people knew him for a long time. And he started going by Xavier recently, probably 3 years ago. And watching him do that and how it made him feel, like, made me feel like I could, you know, that I could do that. And it, because you, like, we let such small inconveniences like stand in the way of us like feeling good as people sometimes, which is just like, I don't want to confuse. I don't want to confuse my friend Shireen. Like, I don't, you know, I don't want to, it's gonna, I'm gonna have to explain it, like, whatever, whatever. And it's just like, but if it makes me feel better, like, if I can feel happy about that, like, who cares?
That's a really good point. I remember there was a moment in high school that I mean, I didn't like my name. I still, like, I just don't. I didn't like my name for a long time, and now I'm just accepting it. But there was a moment in high school, because Shireen is a very common Persian girl name. It's like in Farsi, but it's very feminine. And I hated presenting as feminine, and I still kind of do. But I was trying to get people to call me Shane for a minute in high school, and it didn't stick. People made fun of it. My sisters, my mom, my dad didn't get it. And I was just like,
I feel you, though, because like Shane would be a cool, like, androgynous name.
I wanted like a unisex name. I didn't want, because that's kind of, that's how I feel inside. I feel very non-binary, to be honest. And so I didn't want a name to already give me a gender identity without me even having a say in it. But I mean, at this point, I don't know. It feels a little, I've come around to it only because it's the name my parents gave me. Mm-hmm. I really respect and love my parents. I love it because they gave it to me, not because it's mine, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's a great reason.
But, okay, enough about that. So, were you born in Nebraska?
Yeah, I was. So, my parents immigrated. I was born in 90, which I think...
Same with us.
Yeah, I was from the Kleenex joke, I gathered. But I'm still entrenched mentally in the allergies that I don't have. You know what I mean? Like, I can't relate, and so I'm very fascinated. I mean, because right now is specifically bad like allergy that? Time. I'm sorry. My sinuses work.
I'm out of here. Mostly. Okay, I'm out of here. That's my line.
So rude. Oh, my God. No, so anyway, yeah, they immigrated in, like, the late 70s, early 80s. Yeah, I think, like, late 70s. And so, I was born here. I was born in 90, and then my two brothers, my brother Charbel was sort of, like, right on the border of when they immigrated. But, yeah, I was, and then, yeah. Yeah, I was born in Nebraska. That was a really long answer to a simple question.
No, it's okay.
I feel like that's just the, like, you podcast and then you just end up talking for 10 minutes when somebody asks you a yes or no question.
I mean, okay, let's make it easier. Why did your parents immigrate to Nebraska? Do you know why that they chose Nebraska?
I think they knew my dad and uncle played a semi-professional soccer in Palestine, in, like, Nazareth and Haifa. And I think my uncle got a scholarship to a school in Nebraska somehow. I think he knew somebody who I actually know, but they went to school, and then at some point they were going to move to LA. My uncle flew out to LA to get an apartment, and then the next day my dad's flight got canceled because of weather. And so he, like, showed up to work and got a promotion for showing up on his day off. Oh. And then they stayed in Nebraska forever.
Wow.
Yeah, and he did not, like, that job is not a part of, nor was a part of his life for very long after that. But I think that's essentially how it happened. But then they became, like, very entrenched in the community here somehow. And, like, as a lot of, I think, you know, Arab immigrants do, they just are industrious and sort of, like, made a world for themselves here. And it worked out really well for them.
But when you say community, is there an Arab community in Nebraska?
Oh, no. They sort of just, like, strived. My uncle owns, like, a few hotels now.
Wow.
In my hometown. And so he's just, like, a business person who sort of, like, I think was able to flourish here.
Well,
but there's like a few other Arabs in my hometown that I'm not related to, but I call, like, you know, I call them, like, my uncle or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Like, Ammo. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I would think it would feel weird if I was to date one of their children because they're, like, my cousins. You know what
I mean? Right. You grew up together.
Yeah.
Dating cousins is cool.
Sick.
Have you seen Rami?
Yeah. I just lost my train of thought. No, I was going to say, what hotels are we talking? No, I'm just joking. I'm just trying to stay for free at your uncle's hotel?
You just come out to the middle of Nebraska. I'll hook you up at the Holiday Inn Express.
What? Oh, yeah. My God. What if that was all it took? I'm like, that was my the God. End game. That's so, okay. I'm going to marry your uncle. My poor boyfriend in the other room was just like, what the fuck is she talking about in there?
Dating cousins, marrying uncle?
I know. Well, he's heard all about dating cousins. But it is a real thing where you're like, that's my cousin. And you're like,
I mean, they're not really my cousin. I have a lot of aunts and uncles that married their cousins, but it's very normal to them, you know? Like, my mom was explaining to me the other day, it's not as strange as we think for them.
There was also,
like, for us
that,
it's like, no.
There was that New York Times article that was like, it's fine. Which I was, it's like, oh, fine. Cool. Thank you, New York Times.
The author married their cousin. I'm just kidding. I don't know.
New York Times, like, it's fine. Genetics, you're fine. You're a little too far removed. You're not gonna have, like, weird kids. And I'm like, thanks, I guess.
But I think the problem is, like, for my dad's family, for example, his parents, my grandparents on my dad's side were cousins. And I don't know how related they were. So I think that's the issue that happens, is that, like, one time,
like,
maybe you're fine
scheme.
Genetically, but it doesn't, it's such a tradition that sometimes it kind of gets ahead of itself and you don't really realize that. I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows? It's a pyramid scheme of incest.
Basically.
It's like Cutco knives of incest.
Yeah. So based off your point before we tangented on that. What did your parents end up doing when they came to Omaha to kind of like build out their, after they, your dad got this job? You said he wasn't there for very long. So where did he go from there?
My dad paints like houses and buildings and has been doing that for a long time. But no, my parents are really interesting. My mom, she was like 18 when she moved here, and she ended up getting like a, she got like two master's degrees and then one doctorate, and has like in her second language fucking been published so many times and passed legislation in Nebraska and all this crazy stuff. And she was like the head of the social work department at the university in my hometown for a super long time. And so it's funny because my mom is like one of the more educated people I know. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, I don't even know, like, you know, my dad just is like out here painting houses and doing really well for himself, it, you know. And so that's cool. But I think that's essentially what, yeah, that was like their vibe. And I think that you, like everybody sort of came over after that because I have like four other uncles here in Nebraska and then a couple others throughout like, you know, in Seattle or Florida.
So a lot of, there was a lot of chain migration who just came out after your family did, after your
parents. I think that's what happens. They send like one person and they're like, it's okay, everybody.
Yeah.
Like my Teta and Sito on my dad's side are like buried here. You know what I mean?
Wow, cool.
Yeah. And meanwhile, my Sito on my mom's side, they like flew his body back to Nazareth.
Oh, now is that, was that like his choice?
Yeah. I mean, that's where he lived though. You know, like he, oh, they would only come here sometimes.
Oh, okay.
And it just so happened that when he, you know, like died, he was here.
Yeah.
And he didn't, yeah, I don't think he wanted that. Like my grandma had COVID this year and like, I think the driving factor of like her getting better was like, I don't want to die here, which like no one does. Who wants to die in America? It's like terrible. Can you think of anything more American though than like dying of COVID?
I mean, yeah, my uncle, it wasn't from COVID. He was in the hospital from a complication and they, I didn't get a clear answer what the cause was, but he did die last year. And a Muslim, a traditional for us anyway, like I'm sure it's for you too, but like a Muslim funeral is like pretty important when it comes to like mourning and grieving the dead. And I'm sure my uncle would have wanted that, but it's just, it wasn't possible. Like my dad was the only one that went and he like, they were like in a parking lot or something because of like COVID regulations and stuff. And so, especially because your grandparents are Palestinian, like they probably would want to go be there. That's their home.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they, you know, they like live, my Teta still lives in the house that like my grandpa built in Nazareth. Like,
yeah,
they've been there, and on, because like, you know, Arabs in legally Israel, but like the big Arab Palestinian enclaves are Haifa and Nazareth, and I think there's one more. The housing laws there are so fucked. Like Arabs in Israel can't own property long term.
Right,
they're like 40-year leases. But if you built it originally, you're like allowed to stay there, but like there's laws about how you hand things down and you can't like acquire more, which is why you see specifically there, like old houses getting added like layers, you know, like your dad will build you like your house when you get married, will be like on top of their apartment or their house.
Yeah.
It's really, because
you can build up not
exactly
wide or whatever, not horizontal. Yeah. That's, I mean, I can, we can go on so many rants about how Israel treats Palestinians and Arabs.
I mean, Michael Che is like getting heat for saying the most benign, and I don't want to stan him at all because I know he has his own like anti-trans issues, but like he's getting so much heat for the most benign joke that
which
I've
is
ever heard.
Not even a joke. It's literally just what is happening. Like it's the, 100%. It's like literally, look it up. It's genuinely like Israel is not letting vaccines get into the Gaza Strip. They're not, you know what I mean? Like
it's wild.
Jewish people are, and then there's one argument that really got me mad where it was like, they're vaccinating all citizens. What you're not understanding is that they don't, Palestinians, it's hard for them to even be citizens, let alone be acknowledged as a citizen. Yeah. Like, so I don't know.
And also they're prioritizing Jewish citizens over Palestinian Arab citizens that are technically like Israeli passport holders.
Yes.
Yeah. And don't, I mean, Gaza, no chance, Gaza, go fuck yourself, apparently, because they don't give a shit about the people in those lives that they're truly like trapped and living in like an open air prison.
Yeah, exactly. It's, I mean, I was very surprised that Michael Che even made that comment.
I mean, let's be real. The Weekend Update writers wrote it. We're giving a lot of credit to Michael Che when it's like he's reading a joke that was written for him.
But I do think that him being one of the head writers, like, he has a choice whether or not he's going, like, it's his face saying it. Like, I think at the end of the day, he signed off on it. So, like, I was surprised that he, the SNL did that. And, like, my whole parent, my mom was too. And she was, and I told her, like, wow, I'm so surprised that he did this. And then she responded, yeah, I'm kind of annoyed there weren't many laughs, though. I was like, I told her, like, Twitter is going wild. And she was like, oh, okay, good.
Right. When I saw it, like, being posted on Instagram and, like, all the Arab meme accounts were posting it, I was like, oh, shit, he must have, like, said something. Right. And then I watched it and I was like,
the briefest joke.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is like the news. Like, it's not a joke. And then, like, a couple days later, it started getting, like, backlash, and the word anti-Semitic got thrown around. And I'm like, what do you mean?
I went on a whole rant on Twitter. Every couple of weeks, I have a rage tweet fest, and I just, like, rage tweet one after the other. And I got so many trolls and idiot people calling me anti-Semitic and telling me I was a racist. And I reported all of them, and Twitter got back to me saying it doesn't count as hate speech. So fuck Twitter. But yeah,
I think the issue is, like, you know, as it's always been, but, like, specifically people are being reminded of right now, like, criticizing Israel is often equated to, like, anti-Semitism when it's really anti-Zionism, and those things are, like,
it's also, like, different. Anti-Israeli government.
Yeah.
It's like the people aren't doing it. It's the government who's running the IDF and, like, controlling. It's Netanyahu's dumbass, like, racist, Zionist, piece of shit ass, BB, fuck off. That's the fucking weird, like, he's running the Zionist extreme into the ground in a way that you're like, hey, come on, guys. I don't know about you, but you're not seeing this. He's acting like a motherfucking dictating murder, genocide, apartheid creating fucking piece of shit, and you're out here being like, okay, well, you know what, it's just like, that's anti-Semitic. And it's like, no, it's not anti-Semitic, it's facts. You can't be anti-Semitic when you're critiquing a government literally like creating a genocidal situation in one part of their Gaza, and then also at the same time setting an apartheid state in another part of it. Like, what is there to even argue?
I think they make an exception because they assume a country and a government run by a Jewish person can't possibly be criticized, because they don't realize that criticizing Israel, criticizing Zionism, rejecting Zionism isn't anti-Semitic. It's truly, like, that train of thought in a way is kind of anti-Semitic to me. Like grouping everyone into one belief system, in my opinion, is more anti-Semitic than criticizing Israel. Like, it's truly absurd, and I got so much hate for saying that on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you say the same thing about Saudi Arabia, but because it's like Islam, they're like, yeah, right? Like, Muhammad bin Salman is evil. And you're like, okay, well, so is Netanyahu. Like, they're all evil. They're all dictators. Yeah. But if you point out one, not okay. You point out the other, they're like, totally, girl, fuck Islam. And you're like, what? What? Are you serious? I fucking hate everybody.
Well, on that note, so uplifting, let's take our last break and we'll be right back.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Okay, and we're back with Jabril. I want to ask you about your filmmaking work, why you decided to pursue filmmaking and stuff. And I guess you kind of touched on this earlier about how you, growing up in the Midwest, kind of did a number on you. Can you kind of just explain that a little bit and how that led you to LA or like pursuing film at all?
You know, I think growing up, I have somehow like escaped the word diaspora in this podcast, but I'll just like, you know, start the drinking game of like any Arabs recorded using that word. Uh-huh. But I think that like, you know, after 9/11, that the spread of our culture, you know, it's just like so affecting that it became, I think I just really, really wanted to get out. And like my family was affected like directly and the government was like really targeting Arabs in certain ways. And I think that for me constantly like trying to assimilate to whiteness, whether that's like not bringing certain food to school or not wanting to speak Arabic in front of your friends or your parents speaking Arabic in front of your friends and you feeling very embarrassed or, you know, whatever it was, just became toxic. And that left me feeling really confused identity-wise. Hmm. Also combined with the way government classifies Arabs in this country as like technically Caucasian. Mm-hmm. And then more than that, like how I think pleased some older generations of Arabs are to just like be able to hide under the guise of like whiteness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that plus like the Palestine Israeli conflict and my family having dual citizenship with Israel, like those things, it was a lot of like dichotomies that it took, you know, take educating and asking questions about to sort of understand. And also the fact that like white people are just, especially when they're non-educated about, you know, like white people don't know what Arabs look like. I went my whole life with people thinking I was like Greek or Mexican or some sort of Latin. And I mean, it still happens in LA and like, I don't correct, like I'll go to the like supermarket, like the little market at the bottom of my hill and they'll like speak to me in Spanish and I'll just like pretend I'm like the quietest Latinx person alive. So I can just like continue that guys, because I think it's fun. But I think that like, it essentially like I left me, you know, having made a bunch of shit, you know, as a filmmaker or a creative in general, because, you know, poetry was like my first real love in life. It was like my major in college for like 2 years. And then when I went and had a lunch with like my mentor, whose name was Kat. I had like such a huge crush on this person. But I saw she worked at a bank and she's like an amazing poet. And I thought she was so great. And I was like, yo, I don't want to work at a bank. And so I was like, I know what I'll do. I'll like chase the money and be a filmmaker. As if that was,
I didn't know that was your origin story, man. I do remember that we both talked about poetry being our first kind of like creative outlet. Because I definitely, that resonates with me so much. I definitely consider it like my first love as like a kid, especially mm-hmm. like a angsty preteen. Yeah,
definitely.
But it is interesting. You're one of maybe like two people that I know that like pivoted from poetry to film, like similar to me. And I think it's like an interesting lens to go through because I think our work ends up being a little bit more like emotional or driven by like the same reasons we made I made poetry as like a dealing with myself. And I think my films are the same way.
Poetry felt so freeing to me. And I think for a long time, I didn't really know what I had to say as like an artist or whatever. I think there's a lot of like invalidation of like my own experience that came along with growing up in the Midwest. And I think that like jump to filmmaking, like, up to like six. I had just come off of making this show for Crypt TV called Sunny Family Cult, and it had run like, it started in like 2016, but it ran like four seasons. And by the end of the first one, and it had become pretty big, like premiered at Tribeca, and I think over its four seasons has like 100 million views across YouTube and Facebook, and was like the number three show on Facebook watch for a while. It was doing somewhat well, and I was taking meetings based off of it, and people were asking me questions about it, and like what I wanted to do next, and like what kind of horror did I want to do, and like more shit like that or whatever. And I was having a really hard time in those meetings because like I don't feel connected. I didn't and don't particularly feel connected to that work or work I had done previously. I think I was just making things that I thought were fun, or, you know, I would get asked by a company and they would give me some prompt, whatever it was. Like, you know, I think I just like sort of happened into a few, not even successful, but like smallly successful digital things. And I think that like at a certain point after some meetings, I like looked at the work I had done and felt like so disconnected from it. And then realized that like, this is what I kind of said earlier, which is along with the name change, was me realizing that like the way I thought about myself internally, like was not in any way represented on the screen when I made things, or just like as much with friends. And I think that like becoming, you know, feeling seen in certain relationships, like I had a relationship end with another Palestinian person, and it like fucked me up.
Why is
and
that?
And I'd known this person like my whole life.
Uh-huh.
And I like, after we broke up, it was like a 2-year relationship, and like it ended poorly.
Okay.
And I acted like a little baby. And I think that like what I realized is like, I had never felt validated by like another Arab in that way before. You know, like your parents mm-hmm. is one thing, but like I had never been with someone that I felt seen by fully. You know, I mean, I had white friends who I would like do drugs with in high school and have fun with. And I had a lot of girlfriends in high school and they were cool. And I really enjoyed them and they're good people, but I didn't feel connected to them in that way. Like I couldn't bring my whole self. And then with my parents, like, you know, they're your parents. And so I think that like for me, and I didn't even realize that at the time, but after we broke up, I realized that like after a lot of therapy, the reason I like took it so hard, or like it had such like a, I felt so like, you know, tore up by it, was that like, I think I had lost like that. I had felt what it felt like to just feel at a base level understood and seen, and like not have to contextualize your existence or your experience or the foods you eat, like what Shireen and I were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. Like not having to do any of that work with someone and them just like getting it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what that made me realize in my what I wanted to do with my work is make stuff that allows me to feel seen and allows me to feel understood, and like how beautiful that is, and how happy it makes me to feel that way and spend time with people that make me feel that way. And so I think a lot of my work since then has been like sort of focused on doing that. And, you know, I have a short film that I've been working on for a while that you've read, Shireen, called Amir, that's essentially like my experience plus my producer, Andrew Cummings, who is an Asian man who was adopted and like grew up in Alabama. Like it's sort of like an experience that happened to him combined with like a bunch of fuck shit that was said to me growing up, like racist stuff, and then like dramatized more. So I have like that and some other stuff going on. But I think like allowing myself to feel closer to my work has been really rewarding,
mm-hmm.
And put me in a position mentally and emotionally where like I feel a lot more centered consistently. I'm working on a docuseries right now with Rima Seal, who's a Palestinian chef who did what you met Deline from. Mm-hmm. So for Dema, she did that. Her and I are working on a docuseries right now that my manager is pitching out, hopefully, and it goes well. But it's all about like Arab food and calling it by its proper name and like not hiding behind like ambiguous terms like Mediterranean,
yeah,
or Middle Eastern. And like, why is it so hard and special to find a Palestinian bakery and like, you know, all these things. And so I think that like what I'm trying to do with my work is a representation of like what I wish I was able to feel growing up, if that makes sense.
Of course,
that's a really long explanation, but it all
no,
sort of
no, it's
It's something that we talk about all the time, is being the people that we needed when we were kids, being the person that your former self needed to be, because no one else will be it for you. Like,
yeah,
it's a combination of lack of representation, but also kind of similar to what you said about what his connections looked like, what his community looked like, not having the positive reinforcement, you know, like of it, that would maybe produce a more confident version of us in a way, as far as our culture goes. But I really love the docuseries idea. I really think Arabic food, Middle Eastern food in particular, it's so like one whitewash, but also like in a way like Israeli wash, because sometimes you'll see like Israeli couscous or like Israeli falafel, and it's just like,
it's like, I'm sorry, what did they invent this in 1947?
Like, you know, but
oh my god.
Have you seen this video of Arab grandmas trying the Trader Joe's za'atar seasoning?
No, but send it to me, because that Trader Joe's seasoning is stupid.
It is. It's like they have a za'atar seasoning, but it's like one of those things where it's like Middle Eastern inspired.
Mm-hmm. And it's also like the smallest. Like, I saw a picture of it. It's like the smallest like pepper shaker of za'atar. And
but it's like, not za'atar.
Yo, that's enough for like one meal.
It's not za'atar though. Oh my God. It's not good.
It's just like thyme and sesame seeds. Yeah, Trader Joe's is some fuck shit. I think they have like a lot of Israeli products pouring in. They have like Bumba and like some, they have a Knafi, I've heard. Mm-hmm. A bunch of shit.
Yeah, it just bothers me when like there was a place in Silver Lake that was marketed as like an Israeli eatery, but the food was like my food. It was like hummus and falafel. And like me and Deline had talked about it before when we first met about Sofra Daime, and which was like, Sofra Daime was this collection of poetry and how would you describe it? Like, it's almost like
it was essentially like a night, like it was an experiential like dinner. Mm-hmm. That I think celebrated Palestinian cuisine and cooking.
Mm-hmm.
In the like Palestinian identity, and also served as like a counterbalance to how many, I don't want to speak for Delane, but in my mind served as a counterbalance for like how many Israeli restaurants are, you know, bastardizing Palestinian food. Yeah. And then there was also a zine
that
I wrote a piece for, you wrote a piece for, and Deline did, you know, this is a beautiful zine. That's
I
great.
Really like that zine.
Yeah, and your poem in it is beautiful.
But yeah, I'm excited for the docuseries because I think it's so needed. And I think that's exactly something that I want to watch. I want to watch an appreciation of the places that I want to be appreciated. I want to talk about why chocolate hummus is a crime.
Like, oh my fucking God, it's such bullshit. My friend Salafa runs a Instagram account called Don't Call Me Hummus. Uh-huh. And it's amazing. I fucking stan it. It's great.
Okay, I need to look it up.
You should check it out. But yeah, I'm really excited. I think there's also, with that series, like, I want to really explore the way, like, white people are comfortable, like, consuming our culture, like, literally. And also, like, figuratively. Like, they're very happy to, like, trade off of, like, Arab culture or use it when it's suitable for them. But, like, refuse to accept it or, like, call it by its actual name. You know what I mean?
They only accept it. Yeah, you're completely right. It's they accept what they want from it, and when push comes to shove, they're not real allies. You know, like they only accept their. It's almost like fetishization in a way. You know, like they're fetishizing this like belly dancing idea of what they think our culture is.
It's literally like Aladdin the fucking cartoon, which is like I remember watching as a kid. And it being like the thing. And then I read Edward Said's like Orientalism. And it's just like, you know, Aladdin's one of the most racist things I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we all actually, I don't agree because I do have a pet monkey that talks and steals from me. So I'm just joking. It is pretty fucking, but it's sad because it's like growing up, that's all you had.
Yeah. And so we all loved it.
Jasmine. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, I don't understand anything.
For real.
Thank God for Disney telling us what we're supposed to be like.
Yeah, that is really sad because it was the only thing that was semi like us. That's the only thing we had. So we all needed to like it, you know, like we all, I don't know. Even now, when I was trying to describe the concept of djinn to someone, And all they could think about was the genie from Aladdin. And I was like, no, listen to me. It's not, yeah. They're not genies. It's not Aladdin. Forget it. Please forget about Aladdin. Like, it's just, yeah. I don't know. It's, yeah.
I mean, also like Aladdin and Jasmine are like the two characters specifically in the cartoon that are like, all they have is white features. And then everyone else is like the most offensive caricature of like an Arab person. You know, yeah. Like the extremely like large nose or mm-hmm. the like very short and fat, like bearded man, you know, it's just so.
The only acceptable versions so of fucked. Us are the light skin versions because there's so much colorism already. Like the light skin European versions of us, which is really unfortunate. I don't know. I feel like so many communities of color deal with the same thing where how they're presented in the media when they are presented, it's a very Euro version of it in a way. Or like
I mean 100% white
version. I agree. Yeah.
That's why Israel is like so easily accepted by the fucking world. It's because yeah. it's filled with white people.
Yeah.
And it's not. I remember like the first time I think I was like 14 or 13 and I was playing FIFA and I noticed that Israel was listed as like a European country. And I was like, but why? I was so confused by it. And it was like one of the early moments in my life where I was like, the inequity of FIFA seeping into my life.
Yeah. Wow. FIFA was definitely an Arab pastime.
It definitely is. That and like walking like hunched forward with your hands behind your back with a grumpy look on your face.
Yeah. I still do yeah. that.
Same.
To this day. So does my father.
Jubilee, this has been a delight, long time coming. I feel like we can genuinely talk about so many other things. I feel like we barely scratched the surface when it comes to you and what you can say. You're just gonna have to come back and give us a round two.
I'm happy to anytime. Thank you for having me, for real. I'm such a fan and you guys are really wonderful.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah,
thank you. I really appreciate you coming on and telling us about your life, and I'm glad someone else also doesn't understand their name.
Yeah. It's a very common experience, I feel like, but I'm excited for this Jibril, this path of Jibril that you're going on, because like I've met a good amount of Gabes, good amount of Gabriels, but Jibril, like the Arabic version of that name is so beautiful. Like Jibril is like truly so just such a badass name, and it's yours. And I'm excited that you're claiming it. So,
me too. Thank you. I'm hoping that I'll finally be able to understand "Call Me by Your Name," which is a really stupid joke that I felt like making when
I mean you Anna said it. We're keeping joke, it. In.
So there it is.
Yeah, I'm really glad that we became friends, regardless of the way it happened. And it's like kind of funny, honestly. Like the origin story of our friendship is just like on the basis of like we had the same last name.
I know,
but it's unique. So I appreciate it for being unique and different. And I appreciate you because you're also unique and different, just like us. And you're just gonna have to come back and tell us all about like the updates of the work that you're doing, and we can rant about Israel some more.
Yeah, dude, fingers crossed on that docuseries, and maybe I can come back. You guys should have Reem on. She's so much cooler than me. She's amazing.
Is she who you're working on the docuseries with?
Yeah, she'll be like the host and the chef. She's truly like an activist and like superhero.
Oh, hell yeah. No, person. Definitely. After we're done, send us her info. That's
we'd
love to talk to that kind of person. Me and Anna have talked about kind of getting different kinds of guests on, like activism. Like, by the time you're hearing this, we'll have Anna's friend who's a farmer, you know? Like, it's just like all these avenues of people that are not just comedians, even though we love them. But yeah, I'm excited. And you heard it here first. We're going to have Reema or Reem?
Reema Seal. I say Reem.
Okay.
R-E-E-M. Yep.
We're going to have Reema on. You heard it here first. So stay tuned for that. And tell our audience where they can find you on the internet if you want to be found.
Yeah. Jibril, J-I-B-R-A-E-L, Eunice, Y-O-U-N-E-S, on Instagram. And that's pretty much it. I also have a podcast called Overanalyze This. It's a movie podcast that you guys should both come on
We didn't even touch on the podcast. I forgot. I forgot to ask you on the podcast. Oh. But yeah, we'd love to come on and talk about movies.
Yes.
Okay. This is Ethnically Ambiguous, Ethnically Amb, AMB on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, AMBIG on Instagram. I'm Shireen. It's ShiroHero on Instagram and ShiroHero666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosni on Twitter.
And until next time, don't buy the Trader Joe's Zatuck. Try to get it from an Arab store or find someone to ship it to you from Palestine or anywhere else. Thanks.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.